My next guest on Duologues is building a niche in the EV space by delivering products for the last mile and more. With her exceptional vision, leadership skills, and passion for the automotive industry, she is driving everything at Kinetic Green and Power Solutions. Please join me as I welcome Ms. Sulajja Firodia Motwani, Vice Chairperson of Kinetic Engineering and Founder and CEO of Kinetic Green Energy and Power Solutions, to this episode of Duologues. So Sulajja, thank you so much for having us here for this conversation. And this is my 20th Duologues. It's a pleasure to be here at your premises. And you know, when I reflect upon the time when I was growing up, Kinetic used to be a household name. And I have myself, in the earlier part of my life, utilized the iconic products like Luna and then subsequently Kinetic Honda. From an insider's point of view, make some reflections of how this journey has been, how did the company start, and what is the kind of legacy which you, being inside the organization, have witnessed over a period of time?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me as a part of this wonderful conversation.
Thank you.
I think that it's lovely that you're bringing some of these stories out there and creating discussion, and you know, people are sharing their journey, which I think is very inspirational for even us to be part of it.
Thank you so much
for inviting me. And I love the question you've asked, because that's really what, you know, I wake up every morning with, and that's what keeps me, you know, going. I'm very fortunate to be have been brought into this world in this family.
Right.
Our family has been really at the forefront of not only automobile industry, but even with a very special purpose that the group got created, and the way the journey has been. It's always been not about the business itself, but about service to the nation and adding value to the society. And even when I was growing up, I was very passionate about, you know, being part of the conversations at home. In a business family, always the dinner conversations tend to be about business. And my father, my grandfather would have discussions over dinner, after dinner, and I would sit as a child also and listen to them. It was always about, you know, bringing products for the society at large, for what is typically called the common man. So not only about creating innovation, but bringing products which would give convenience, comfort, mobility, affordability to people.
True.
And you know, it's always been about that sort of a journey, and that's how these products like Kinetic Luna, Kinetic Honda got created. They have been winners. You know, they have been very innovative. They brought new technology, advanced technology, but within the reach of the masses. So they became household names. And if I look back, you know, there have been of course many other, you know, automobile giants in the country, but Kinetic carved a special place for itself.
True.
In people's hearts.
Yes.
Because Luna and Kinetic Honda both, you know, actually changed lives.
Yeah.
If you remember, Shaan Se Bolo, Chal Meri Luna, it brought mobility for millions.
Absolutely.
You know, it was the first personal vehicle which everybody could afford, and easy to learn, easy to ride, easy to maintain, easy to park. And though it was an affordable product, there was so much aspiration and there was so much pride of possession, you know, which is what I think made it unique.
True.
And there are hundreds of stories about, you know, Luna and how it's changed lives and how it's shaped lives. Similarly, Kinetic Honda, again, it came with the revolution in the 80s. It brought mobility to women,
right,
to the elderly and to the students. You know, it was really, again, a pride possession. And again, if you see, it was a very advanced technology product with Honda as a very
True.
Capable partner, but again, brought within the reach of, you know, a large, you know, part of the society. So these products made a difference to lives of people, and therefore, you know, Kinetic as a brand and the family, you know, have created this special place in people's hearts.
That
and
is
I
true.
Think I'm very fortunate to be part of that legacy.
Yeah.
It's definitely something that you know, is always, you know, with me, and I'm very conscious of that, the fact that I'm taking this legacy ahead, that I have to add to it in a very positive, meaningful way. And that's what drives me. So it's been a wonderful journey, and you know, I'm very fortunate that I get a chance to take it ahead.
You know, this is kind of reassuring, because when I look at the company for which I work, for Panasonic, We have existed for more than 105 years. We were founded in 1918. And apart from the fact that at the center of whatever happens within Panasonic for last 105 years, which is the basic business philosophy, which is the purpose of our existence, something which resonates is the philosophy which our founder gave, if I remember correctly, back then in 1930s, was that technology should be like tap water. It should be available in abundance and at an affordable cost. And I think it kind of resonates, and that eventually became the very reason of the sustainability of the organization for such a long period. And legacies is a huge responsibility, you know, carrying the legacy forward is a huge responsibility. And now with the founding of Kinetic Green Energy and Power Solutions, what is that which is going to change when it comes to, say, the legacy or the positioning or the purpose of existence? And what is that which is not going to change at all? And what is the thought behind founding Kinetic Green Energy and Power Solutions?
So, you know, this I think is a very exciting phase in my life. And I think, I hope this is a phase which adds to Kinetic Group and its legacy in, again, yet another, you know, meaningful way. So, I think now we started Kinetic Green about a decade ago, 10 years ago. At that time, it was not so fashionable to be an EV company, an electric vehicle company. Today, of course, it's very fashionable, you know, it's the buzzword, and the whole world is excited about what's happening, you know, in the world of automobiles with this green technology. But when we started Kinetic Green, it was, we were one of the pioneering companies in this space. There was hardly any technology, roadmap in the country, policy roadmap was not there, supply chain was not present, there was very little awareness in people's mind about electric. So there were many challenges, you know, which itself has been a, you know, exciting part of how, you know, we moved ahead. But coming back to the question, we started Kinetic Green because I was convinced that the young generation today is definitely looking at green technologies and embracing them, you know, in a much more meaningful way than the early generation.
Absolutely.
And the world is going green. This is before the net zero, you know, got signed.
Right.
But definitely the world is going green.
Right.
And I think that if you look at the automobile technology, it's remained the same over the last, you know, 50, 100 years,
yes,
let's say almost,
absolutely,
since the birth of the engine. And with every emission standard, the engine is getting heavier and less fuel efficient and more expensive.
Right.
So at a time when the existing technology is becoming less and less viable, more and more expensive, and also the cost of fuel becoming more and more, a burden for the for people, we have a new technology which was just budding. We showed promise to be green, and you already had examples like Tesla or in countries like China which had created commercial applications of this technology.
Absolutely.
And you also had then solar and, you know, other green energies beginning to sort of gather critical mass. So I was convinced that this was the future, and I was very well supported by my father, who gave me the, you know, encouragement that, okay, go for it, you know, I agree with this, that this is the future. And we started Kinetic Green, you know, as a new venture within the group. Again, the purpose was to once again, you know, take ahead the legacy of innovation. We've been kind of, you know, trailblazers. Luna has been India's first moped, Kinetic Honda was India's first gearless scooter. So, you know, wanted to take ahead this whole legacy of innovation and doing something meaningful for the society. So that's how Kinetic Green started, looking ahead at the sunrise sector, something that's going to come and revolutionize the automobile sector. Even in Kinetic Green, I think from the beginning, my purpose had been bringing green mobility to the masses, and always thinking about how we can bring this technology, which is advanced, but within the reach of, you know, many in India. So we began with the vision of making green mobility affordable to the masses, and focused on Make in India from the beginning, innovation, you know, at the sort of grassroots level, looking holistically at how can we create products and platforms which would bring this technology within the reach of the society at large. And that's the purpose with which the company got started, and it's been a very wonderful journey. It's very rare that you get to be at the right place at the right time. I mean, of course, it happened because we took the plunge as an early player, but, you know, I can see now that the what was a disruption is now becoming a revolution. And I think looking ahead, you know, e-mobility is going to really take the world by storm. And we are very happy to be there, you know, kind of at the forefront of, you know, making this change happen.
You mentioned being at the right place at the right time, you know. Yes, that's a very positive perspective, but starting something from scratch is not easy. And, you know, it's been 10 years and I'm sure the journey would have been enriching, full of learnings and challenges also. So how has the journey been like? And when you look at the total ecosystem, there are, if not more, but at least four important stakeholders. The policy makers are one, manufacturers or people who innovate are the second, the distributors or people into retail are the third, the intermediaries, and finally the customers.
Sure.
For which in a country where you know, most of the time the initial cost of ownership plays a larger role, whereas when it comes to electric mobility, I believe it has to be the total cost of ownership. So what are the levers which you believe are to be unlocked? And when it comes to these four set of stakeholders, what are the reflections? Because policies continue to evolve.
Sure.
They cut across enabling the ecosystem in terms of incentives and, you know, guidelines and stuff like that. Parallelly, the distribution system is also starting to adopt distribution and retail of electric mobility. So what are the reflections on the levers which will catalyze this whole adoption of electric mobility?
Sure. So first, if I were to look back, you know, and how the journey has been, because I think the next 10 years are going to be very different from the first 10 years. So when we started, we had to decide, okay, electric vehicle, but what do we do?
Right.
You know, how do we start? What's the right way to approach it? Whether we import something and, you know, get started like many companies have done, whether we look, which segment do we look at? I decided to focus on Make in India from the beginning.
Great.
Because the idea was to create a long-term presence and build a long-term technology innovation base, not just, you know, opportunistically look at the
Wonderful.
Segment. And we joined hands with CSIR, which is the Council for Scientific Industrial Research. They had a program called NIMITLI, New Millennium Technologies. And as a part of that, they were encouraging electric vehicle technology as a new, you know, new field.
Mm-hmm.
So we partnered with them in three of their labs and we created India's first electric three-wheeler platform. Looking at again all the parts of the supply chain, the design, the battery technology, how to make it viable, etc. So that's how we started. It was sort of a ground up venture. And that gave us a lot of insight into the product and the technology overall. You know, not just as a one idea, but as a holistic engineering design, you know, cost,
right.
TCO perspective.
Yeah.
So that's how the journey started. Now, coming to policy, there was no policy. Then I came to know that the government has told SIAM to work with the policymakers and then appointed a consulting firm to evolve policy. So I went to one of the meetings and there were lots of OEMs. Most of them were four-wheel OEMs. So I raised my hand and I said, you know, but what about three-wheelers and two-wheelers? So they're like, oh, are you interested in that? I said, yes, we are. So they said, okay, then can we found, you know, make a subgroup for two and three-wheelers? And that's how the dialogue even for two and three-wheelers started. Whereas it was always about cars, right? Because electric is car in minds of people. So we did a lot of work on the policy front. There was a FAME 1 policy that came, then the FAME 2 policy that came. And I think we've, you know, it's very, I would say, satisfying that we've been able to participate in the thought process. There's been MHI, Niti Aayog, you know, and I think the overall approach of the government has been very positive.
Absolutely.
Because e-mobility is aligned with the government's larger purpose of fuel security, you know,
right.
Net zero, pollution yeah. reduction. So there's been a lot of, you know, openness. And also there's a conviction that India must lead e-mobility. In a sense, there's a bit of a feeling that, you know, when the solar revolution came, you know, we sort of got left behind.
True.
Similarly, with semiconductor, of course,
yeah.
we are making
now
efforts
catching up.
To catch up.
Yeah.
But in EVs, we have a chance to
yeah.
have the right
yeah.
approach from the beginning.
Agreed.
So there's a lot of push to look at it. And in fact, when FAME 2 was introduced, the tweet that came from Niti Aayog was saying that it's time for green mobility for the masses. And the whole focus from electric cars had shifted to bringing e-mobility into two-wheeler, three-wheelers and buses to bring it to the common man.
True.
So, you know, which is sort of aligned with the efforts that we have been making and, you know, talking about. So, it's, you know, we've been able to make a meaningful contribution.
Right.
and the policy roadmap has been, you know, evolving, but in a positive way. Coming to supply chain, again, there was very little supply chain. So what I did was I worked with our group companies. Within our group, there are experts in different fields. So kinetic engineering makes transmissions for even, you know, the other OEMs. We worked with them to develop the gearbox and the axle technology. Kinetic Communications makes electronic products. They have their own SMT factories. They make PCBs. We forward integrated that into converters and clusters and controllers. And Kinetic Motor Company started a EV traction motor division. So we began developing subsystem level expertise as well to help kind of create the whole, you know, ecosystem and reliable platform, which brought waterproof, you know, like IP67 products, which would be suitable for the Indian roads, you know, vibration proof, waterproof, dust proof, etc. Yeah. So we worked also at the supply chain level. I also use my relationships in the industry to go to existing suppliers and talk about becoming suppliers for EVs.
Right.
There was very little interest at those days because
scale was not there,
and India is one of the largest markets in two-wheelers, and
right.
So people were having good business focus there. But we used our relationships to say that, you know, let's get started. So we did a lot of fundamental work there as well. And last but not the least, on the distribution and customer side, right, we created these electric vehicles, but there was very little traction in the market because awareness was still forming. TCO as a concept itself, you know, has to be popularized.
Yeah.
People were concerned about the sticker shock, etc., etc. So we did a lot of work on deployment. We worked with metro authorities in Lucknow, in Kochi, in Delhi, and gave fleets for the last mile connectivity so that people would start using,
right,
and they would become familiar. We worked with, again, state governments and municipal corporations to deploy electric three-wheelers for waste management. So again, the vehicles would come to people's homes, you know, and people would start, you know, whatever, looking at them, interacting with them. Similarly, B2B players who are also having sustainability thought process for e-commerce deliveries. And we worked also with very interesting welfare programs. So in one of the states of Uttar Pradesh, we did a big program to give 10,000 e-rickshaws to cycle rickshaw pullers as a means of better livelihood, which upgraded their social status, economic status, you know, and health, because from cycle rickshaw pulling to owning an e-auto,
right,
they went from earning 200 rupees a day to 1,000 rupees a day. You know, and it was a transformation for them. They had much more income, their daughters were getting married in better families, health improved. So a lot of such deployment opportunities were created to put thousands of vehicles out there, which definitely helped to then create, you know, a positive momentum. In India, as you know, what jo dikhta hai, wo bikta hai. So unless people see it,
absolutely,
and they, you know, they are convinced that it is silent, it is
right,
saving the cost. But we had to create that, you know, put that message out there.
Right.
So I think the country has come a long way. And if I now look at the next 10 years, I think a lot has changed. The policy framework is in place. Customers are now more aware.
Mm-hmm.
And from a push, we are moving towards more of a pull-driven, you know, distribution and marketing. People are coming into our showrooms and at least considering electric three-wheelers and two-wheelers. Which is a big change, right? Because in India, when people meet over dinner, they talk about only films, cricket, politics and automobiles.
Right.
They're talking about EVs. Absolutely. They're considering EVs.
Mm-hmm.
So I think now it's important that we create momentum. You know, we create more and more vehicles out there. So the word of mouth is positive. The policy has to support that.
Right.
We're still at just 5% of penetration. We have to go to 25-30% to gain critical mass.
Mm-hmm.
And also we have to create the ecosystem in terms of charging, in terms of addressing customers' concerns. But I think looking ahead, I see that now that momentum is coming. So it's been wonderful to be part of that early journey to now, you know, a journey of scale.
You're surely catalyzing this journey. A lot of questions come into my mind, very thought-provoking of what you mentioned. So let's say if we simplify it, one is the supply side, the other is the demand side. When it comes to supply side, you in last 10 years utilized a lot of in-house capabilities to build a product, so to say. So to what extent on the supply side would you like to have captive backward integration? Because when I understand electric mobility, it is about batteries, it is about battery management systems, the transmission, the construct of the vehicle itself, the safety aspects, and so on and so forth. A lot goes into the product itself. So on the supply side, to what extent would you like to create your own capabilities?
Sure. So as I mentioned before, you know, our vision is to bring the mobility to the masses.
Right.
And create really innovative products and make it accessible and affordable, so that it really percolates to the society. So not just the tier one cities, not just India, but Bharat,
right.
Tier two cities, tier three cities, even down into the rural areas. Mm-hmm. Because genuinely the cost of transport is transformed the moment you go to an electric vehicle. I'll give an example. We're just about to introduce a product called the e-Luna, mm-hmm. Which is bringing back the magic of Luna in an e-Avtar.
Yeah.
And the big thought there, you know, people say, oh, but, you know, people have moved on from, you know, who was using a Luna and now maybe using a car. About 200 million people in India currently earn between 15 and 25,000 rupees. Now, if these people, after roti, kapda, makan, want to have their own mobility, they're not able to afford it. Because if you buy a ICE vehicle today, a petrol vehicle, you spend about 2-3,000 rupees a month on EMI and about 3-4,000 rupees a month on petrol.
Right.
So your total cost of ownership has gone to 7,000 rupees.
Absolutely.
Now if you're earning 20-25,000 rupees, you don't have that budget for mm-hmm. mobility mm-hmm. after, you know, paying for your necessity. So you end up using a bus or a, you know, a cycle or a shared auto. Now cut to e-Luna, the EMI is 2,500 rupees and there is no fuel cost. So with the charging cost, your total cost has become less than 3,000 rupees.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly these 200 million people can now afford personal mobility.
Wonderful.
So that's the power of EVs, you know, and e-Luna, of course, I gave it as an example because that's the most, you know, apt example of once again creating.
Democratizing the.
Yeah, technology. Bringing the magic of ability for more and more people to afford personal mobility.
When is it hitting the market?
Very soon. We've already started the pilot production. So hopefully in August.
Yeah, we'll look forward to that.
Thank you. And we are so excited about it. And
right.
It's again going to be shaan se bolo chal meri Luna. So
fantastic. Disruption also can sometimes get disrupted if, you know, products which are low on safety, and, you know, quite often in the recent past we have heard instances of safety related accidents, you know, some of the batteries catching fire and stuff like that. So what is the solution for that? Policy interventions, educating the customers to pick up the right applications and the products, etc. How do you see that aspect of reliability, durability and safety looking forward to the next decade?
So I think policy is most critical in this, and I think the government is now taking more aggressive steps in this regard. Recently the new battery safety norms have been introduced in the country, especially after the incidents that happened,
right,
where now we have probably one of the safest battery standards that have been instituted,
mm-hmm.
With a lot of fire safety, you know, propagation material, alarm systems, cell level controls, etc., that have been put in.
Right.
So I believe that with the new regulation, you will see a much higher level of safety on the vehicles.
Right.
Similarly, on the customer side, customer education side, it's very important to create awareness, the right protocols of charging, using the battery, you know, taking care of your vehicle, and a lot needs to be done in that area, and I think it's being done.
How does the life of a consumer look like in case of two-wheelers? What are the insights which are coming in, and are these products also connected? Are you also getting these insights back there in the organization, that what are the charging patterns, say for the scooters, for the three-wheelers? How does the life of a consumer look like?
So it's very interesting, right? I mean, if you want to bring a technology to people and you want them to adopt it, mm-hmm. you have to make it as similar,
simple, yeah,
as simple or as similar to what they're currently doing.
Right.
So because two and three wheelers, or even bus to that extent, e-bus, which is also another important focus for the government, are intra-city products.
Right.
So you use your vehicle all day and you come home in the night, and that's where you can charge it.
Right.
And even the charging is easy. You know, just like you charge your mobile phone, you have an adapter. You plug it into the socket,
right,
a normal 15 amp socket,
right,
and your vehicle is charged.
Sure.
So because of this, because you don't need a big fancy charging infra,
right,
you don't need public charging infra, because
right,
you can give enough range to by and large meet the use case in one charge. People are able to use a vehicle all day and come home and they can charge it.
Right.
Beyond this, now there are a few more solutions which will come up. which will further add to the convenience, and they are more around the battery side. For example, today a customer is buying an electric vehicle with the battery. So, it's like you're buying a scooter with 3 years or 5 years of fuel in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course, it's going to be more expensive than buying an ICE scooter where you're buying the vehicle up front and then filling fuel every day, even though the TCO is still much more attractive.
Mm.
But the fact that you're buying the vehicle with the battery, it's going to cost more.
True.
Today, the government subsidy is reducing that difference to a large extent.
Mm.
But we cannot only rely on subsidy as a means of, you know, bringing down the
initial cost.
The initial cost or the price parity.
Yeah.
So can you provide a customer a solution where you're selling the vehicle separately and selling the battery as a fuel, like customers are buying petrol or diesel? Can you make the battery into battery as a service? That does two things. One is that it reduces the upfront cost drastically, and your EV, being a simpler machine with fewer moving parts than an ICE vehicle, will always be more affordable if you buy it without the battery. So there are now new models evolving, like battery swapping is one of them, and even ideas like battery subscription or battery leasing is one of them.
You touched upon an important aspect about also enabling exports in the time to come, and I believe that it is a reasonably level playing field for the Indian manufacturers to look at that, specifically towards the West.
Mm-hmm.
And Africa in the coming decades will be a huge opportunity to deal with. So what are your ambitions when it comes to exports in the time to come?
Okay, so two, three things I will say. One is that if you look at India as a country, right, I think India has a wonderful opportunity to become an EV hub, you know, for the global markets. For two, three reasons. One is that, you know, in the area of power electronics, in the area of many of the components, you know, our supply chains are now getting well established.
Yeah.
And I think that if we create scale, because we have a large local market, India is now the world's third largest automobile market,
true,
world's largest three-wheeler market, world's second largest two-wheeler market, world's fourth largest car market. We have the scale.
Yeah.
If we move forward, certainly with the scale and strength of the local market, we can create, you know, solutions which can go for EVs worldwide.
Right.
India could become a hub for small electric cars worldwide. Certainly, you know, that is the space that India can look at as a country. Cell manufacturing is going to start in India in a big way. You know, there is that sort of the next phase that we are hoping will pick up. We could, you know, don't have to then only look at another country for manufacturing cells. India could also, you know, put in large gigafactories.
Absolutely.
So there are many opportunities for India as a country as a whole.
Right.
Coming specifically to our segments, Indians have been dominating regions like South Asia, Africa, Latin America,
mm-hmm,
in two and three wheelers already. I don't see why in electric, you know, that cannot be an opportunity. However, today it has not yet, I would say, started because many of those countries have not yet put in place their own EV policies,
okay,
whether it's for import, whether it's for custom duties, registration, or incentives for EV customers in those countries. So I think now the dialogue has to begin to promote, you know, electrification of their transport sectors.
Right.
And I think in the next few years, you know, India could try and lead some of these conversations and that will really help. At our level, we are working, but without the policy support, you know, it's harder to penetrate. But I think that is something that, you know, we can look forward to. There's one more interesting thing that we are doing in Kinetic, which is sort of our global opportunity, which is very unique. In the field of light mobility, right, in addition to two and three wheelers, we're setting up a venture to make golf carts.
Mm-hmm.
And we have tied up with one of the world's most premium brands, which is the Lamborghini family. So these are the founders of Lamborghini cars, and they have their own business for luxury products.
Okay. So when are these products hitting?
So the JV has already been formed and the vehicles are
wonderful,
under engineering now. So next year is when we would roll them out.
Yeah.
So we say in Kinetic Green that three-wheeler is our bread, two-wheeler is our butter, because that's where the scale comes from. And the golf cart is the jam.
Interesting.
That's all about, you know, going global and building a high aspiration and, you know,
fantastic,
high margin, and it's very exciting because we're taking Indian made EVs to the world.
Absolutely.
But in our own field of light mobility.
It would be interesting to look at, and the thoughts coming to my mind is that if at all we have to become a hub, we have to look at creating these spokes in the time to come. And we cannot have an ambition which is very central to all what we want to do here. So in that sense, in line with the evolving policies where job creation for a lot of countries is a priority, so maybe some part of the manufacturing happens here, say of the core technology, and say on a SKD model, spokes get created in the respective countries. I think that is how it has to evolve in the time to come. And that conversation needs to be catalyzed from now onwards, because some of the competitor countries, if I can say, are already having their ambition, and they have started to set some of the shops in the countries to either utilize the FTAs as they exist in some of the regions to build those hub and spoke capabilities. So in that sense, we may have to hurry up when it comes to the mobility, electric mobility opportunity in the time to come.
And I think, you know, I think organizations like FICCI, etc., can play a role in this. To build that dialogue, I think they've already been, you know, creating a wonderful conversation around what we need to do in India. And I think this can be an area that, you know, can help the whole, you know,
We'll look forward
policy
to that.
Advocacy.
So, Suraja, coming to the second part of the conversation, which is your life itself, some of the aspects of your personal life, you know, it would be interesting to know when you were kind of growing up, what was your ambition like? What was that which you were wanting to like do and become? And when you now reflect back, how similar or different that is from the time when you were growing up and now?
So, I was a very active, you know, child, into sport, academics, and doing a lot of things. So, in fact, my father says that, you know, my teacher, when he went for a parent-teacher meeting, said that, in Marathi, she said that, you know, she's a very smart kid. Pan tichi gadbad means like she's too much moving around, hyperactive. And I grew up with this whole idea of being, becoming, being part of Kinetic. It was not about being a businesswoman, but I was very passionate, I was very interested in this whole world of automobiles. When we would go from home to school, we would count the number of Kinetic Hondas, you know, on the road. I was a motorcycle rider myself. So I always grew up with that thought. I was very close to my grandfather, who was the founder, of course, you know, of the business enterprises, but also a very true entrepreneur. And he gave me a lot of encouragement. When I was small, he would take me to his office and I would doodle on his office walls. You know, so I sort of always grew up with this idea that I would be part of Kinetic, and I loved what we were doing. So when I went to the US for my education, I worked there. Coming back and being part of Kinetic was always part of my life plan. And, you know, I think that I'm very fortunate that, you know, things fell into place, or I could help make it happen. And, I mean, I think I am where I belong.
Fantastic.
And I love what I do.
It's logical to imagine that the journey of individuals sometimes is like transformative, it's sometimes organic, from being a very active child to say a very calm and composed person, you know, during the conversation, I believe that is the case. So have you, how have you like channelized your energy?
So I think that sport and fitness has been very integral to my life. And I think, as I said before, because I was so active, you know, hyperactive kid, my mom put me into a lot of activities so that I would come home tired finally. So I played all kinds of sport. I was in gymnastics. I played sport like, I don't know if you know about sports like Khokho and Langdi. These are very, you know, Pune, Maharashtra sports.
I played them enough.
I was a, you know, dodgeball player. So not just like organized sports, but all kinds of sports. Then I, you know, became a badminton player. I played for many years. I played at state, national levels. And, you know, so sport has been very integral. When I went to the US, I picked up adventure sports. So I learned skiing, scuba diving, skydiving, and I passionately pursue, you know, the adventure sports. Now I move more into yoga, gym, running. So it has always been part of my life. And to me, I think fitness means being fit, right? In a way, means being fit to do things, being well. I think that if you are physically fit, it would give you the physical and mental strength to take on challenges. If you're physically fit, hopefully that translates into health.
True.
Then you feel productive, you feel energetic, which will mean that you'll be able to, you know, pursue whatever you want to do and be productive, and it will go a long way in being able to do what you want to do.
Right.
So I think physical fitness also means overall being well, and I think it's very important that we take out that 45 minutes to an hour, you know, every day to do something which helps us to be fit. It could be yoga, could be running, could be walking, could be gymming, could be a sport. But to me, I think it's indispensable, and so it's actually what I am. In a way, it also helped me to, as I was saying before, you know, to learn discipline, to learn to work hard, to face challenges, to win, to lose, and to get up again, and you know, be at it. It's something what I call mind over matter, and that's what, you know, sport teaches you, that if you are playing a sport, if you are playing a match, you know, you have to put your mind to it, you know, right. And if you're tired, even then you have to keep going. You have to practice for your next challenge. So it's that sort of a mind over matter.
So we spoke adequately about some of the important aspects of business, the product itself, the strategies, those kind of things. And founder of Panasonic used to say that we make people before we make our products, because people are central to whatever happens in the organization. How do you look at yourselves as a leader, and what are those philosophies or strategies to build people capabilities within the organization?
I think, of course, that's an area where I have myself learned a lot. I came into Kinetic, which was an existing, you know, culture, mm-hmm. an existing company which had its own people, it had its own set of values, and there was good with it, and there was maybe something which I believe as a young professional needed to be
changed.
And I did my best to bring in that transformation in a way that it cannot be intrusive, in a way that you have to build that, let's say, change, you know, the aspect of change which people have to accept. Because if it's intrusive and not inclusive, then you will not succeed, or you will create fractions within your organization. So it's a kind of a transition. And for me, it was an inclusive transition. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't do it in a way that it was destructive, but I had to make it constructive. And those learnings, when I started Kinetic Green, so Kinetic Green in a way is like a startup, right? In a way, it's a pedigreed OEM because it comes from the house of Kinetic.
True.
It comes with the learning, then, you know, the skill sets, the brand, of course. But in a way, it's a pure play new EV company.
Right.
So I was employee number one in Kinetic Green, and we have built the whole team organically. And so whatever I learned, I have implemented here, and I think in Kinetic Green we are building a very diverse, inclusive, young organization at the operating levels and supported by able leaders on the top. So a culture of youth as well as culture of experience, and I think passion is very critical, and your team also takes that passion from you. I lead from the front. You know, I speak to the team all the time. I'm as much part of the challenges as they are. So I've always had a more leading from the front, inclusive, you know, leadership style, which works for me. I don't know how it will be when Kinetic Green becomes, you know, a multi-billion dollar organization. How will I keep in still touch with the, you know, the whole, you know, all the team members, and, you know, continue on that culture building. But that's something that I have to learn now. So we're on that journey to become a multi-billion dollar organization, but that's something I'll have to learn.
You might be looking up to people or philosophies, like as a mentor, a philosophy itself or certain set of people. So who are those people or philosophies you look up to, like to receive mentorship or to receive motivation or guidance? Are there some people in your life?
So my guiding light has been my grandfather, as I told you.
Right.
I am what I am actually because of him. Even now, of course, he's no more there, but I have his picture on my desk.
Wonderful.
And if I'm in a problem where I don't know the solution, I actually look at it and say, no, what would Dadaji have done?
Wonderful.
What I learned from him was not only the fact that he was a true entrepreneur, he wanted to do good for the society, for India, but also kindness and being straightforward. You know, he was one of the kindest souls. And I meet so many people who say that, you know, your grandfather gave me my first job. He gave me my first order. He gave me, you know, the right advice. He gave me a loan when I needed it. The fact, you know, the being kind is what I try to learn every day from his memory. And also being straightforward, you know, I feel that if you're not genuine, people see through it eventually.
True.
So it's just better to be real and straightforward and honest. That's something that I've learned, and I try to practice this, you know, as I move ahead in life. Otherwise, I read a lot. I like to read inspiring stories. I like to read about people who take risks, you know, who are into uncharted territories. And I think that's, you know, always inspirational to learn as much you can from, you know, other people.
This brings to the last question. What is that very higher purpose which, say, is the reason of whatever you do, which kind of wakes you up every morning, infuses a sense of energy in you? What is that higher purpose?
I think for me, it's about making a difference. Not to sound cliche, but it really is. I feel that, you know, if you have that higher purpose, it will drive you to achieve, work towards, you know, something which is meaningful. So not just, you know, survive or exist, but to live. So for me, it's taking the legacy ahead in my own meaningful way, whatever I can do to continue making a difference to the society, to the nation. And I've chosen mobility as a way to do it. And Kinetic Green, the fact that I can help reduce, you know, pollution in our country, improve the health of our citizens, reduce the cost of transport for people, being a part of people's homes and lives. You know, when you tell about stories about how Luna or a Kinetic Honda has changed something for people,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I can't wait to hear lots of people tell me those stories about Kinetic Green. So it's just about being, you know, kinetic in every home, being part of people's lives, making a difference, leaving a meaningful footprint in as many ways as I can, whether it's purely business or business, you know, doing good by being good.
Yeah.
That's what excites me. And then also, you know, many other initiatives to help the country, the society at large, you know, through CSR or through various forums. But it's about making a difference, you know, and for me, it's about making difference through making mobility affordable, accessible, you know, to people.
Thank you so much. So, Sulajja, it's reasonably evident that you are scripting a transformative story, a great legacy to take forward to. So I wish you all the best in this journey ahead. At FICCI, in my own capacity, I'll try to do my small bit to catalyze the conversations, to speed things up in the time to come, so that the EV adoption in our country, you know, happens at the speed which we thoroughly and truly deserve.
Thank you so much. More power to you.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I'm sure this conversation is going to be equally inspiring and insightful for people who are going to watch it. So thank you very much for the conversation.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's been wonderful having this chat.
Thank you, Sulajja.
Thank you.
Listen to more conversations on Duologues across Spotify, JioSaavn, Apple Podcast, and Google Podcasts.